You are listening to a Bible talk recorded at the 2011 Western Christadelphian Bible School at Manuka. The speaker is Mark DiLiberto, and this is the fourth class in his series on the subject of healing. This address is entitled Steps 9 to 12 and was recorded on July 28th, 2011.
We need to get into hyper speed. So if you think I was talking fast yesterday, you haven't seen anything yet. But let's get in gear, and because I do want to leave some time at the end of this tomorrow to kind of have some interaction. So here we go. Step six we were in yesterday. We were talking about the tools of healing. What was the first primary fundamental tool of healing? Prodigal son's father taught us. What? I can't hear you. Forgiveness. You cannot heal individually, ecclesially, or collectively as a body. We cannot heal unless true forgiveness is present. And by the way, maybe someone got a little confused that the forgiveness is on the part of the individual dealing with the person in a problem. The healing is not only for the person being forgiven, it's also for you and I who are forgiving. That is God's tool to help us heal. Never forget that perspective. I maybe lost focus a little bit that everyone was focusing on the guy who's having all the problems, but it's us. Forgiveness is a tool to help us heal. Okay, and the prodigal son, what a great example. Went out, was looking for him. Once he came back, that father was ready to say, let's come back, let's kill the calf. And unfortunately, the other son had to learn that lesson. I'm going to give you three tools. You could fill in more blanks. Second tool, Luke 18, 9 through 14. We've got to read this because this is written for us. This was written for us. Luke 18, 9. Boy, if this doesn't have Christadelphian written on its label. And I don't want to get down on us. Look, I've been a Christadelphian all my life, and I feel fortunate for it. I've learned, I believe I've learned God's message. It's growing. Hopefully I'm growing. So I don't want to get too down on it. But boy, there are some lessons we've got to keep our ears open to. Here's one of them that was written for us. 18:9. He spake the parable unto certain which trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. So that's the background. That's what Jesus is going to try to expose now. Okay, and this element exists with us to some degree or another. It exists with us. So here we go. He gives a little story. Two men go to the temple to pray. One's a Pharisee, one's a publican. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself. Now, can you relate to this? Here we go. I thank thee, Lord, that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this publican. That's his start. That's his start. I fast twice in the week. I give tithes of all that I possess. What was he saying? Kind of summarize his whole analysis of himself. He is so focused on, he is so self-infatuated with his own life that he did everything he had to do. He did his readings every day. He went to Sunday school. He attended midweek classes. He preached the truth. He read the pioneers. He did it all. And he felt very good about it. Not that what I just itemized is bad. See, I don't want to give the wrong impression here. The things that he did were giving tithes to the poor is a good thing. Reading, I believe, Christadelphian works is a good thing. But if it converts to look at me, nothing. It's goose egg, zippola. In Italian, that means zero, zippola. Because the purpose of that those things are to humble us, not to, what's the word? Elevate us, yes. So, thankfully, Lord, you didn't make me like this other guy, this publican. The publican standing afar off would not even so much as to lift up his eyes into heaven, but smote his breast and says, Lord, be merciful to me, a sinner. And then Christ concludes, I tell you, this man went down to the house justified rather than the other. Why? For everyone that exalteth himself shall be abased. He that humbleth himself shall be exalted. You know what he reminds me of, the publican? The country boy with the boat. Remember the story in the beginning? He didn't do it all. He didn't maybe read all the books and go to all the classes and do all those things. But he learned how to swim. He connected the dots that saved his life. And let me tell you something. Humility is the first dot we better connect. Remember I said to you, when we come to baptism, what is it in essence saying? I can't do it. I cannot make this grade. Brother Adrian is talking about this. It's not in us. That old man is there. And even though we got wet and we came out of the water, that old man still exists. So we need a much greater power than ourselves to overcome it. That's what the publican got. And it saved his life. So, tool number two, forgiveness. Humility is tool number two. Not only for ourselves, to save ourselves, guess what? Do you realize what a difference it makes when you approach someone in a humble spirit as opposed to a prideful spirit? The guy who comes to me telling me how terrific he is, being Italian, I want to put up the dukes. Hey, you're not as good as me. You've got all these. That's the problem. But you approach someone in a humble spirit, what do? You diffuse the tension. That person will feel he could identify with you. You come to him, we come to people with a prideful spirit, and I don't care on what level, whether it's our body, our committees, our ecclesias, or our individuals, we don't develop this humble spirit, brethren, we're never going to heal. You're not going to heal yourself, I'm not going to heal myself, and we're not going to heal and help heal each other. Okay. And the last thing, see if you could figure it. Forgiveness, humility. What do you think the last ingredient, well, it's not the last, you could probably fill in a lot more, but critical to healing. Critical to healing. It's a word that described Christ often. Who had that? Hold on. Could you? Compassion.
See it in your glasses.
I figured. verse to prove it. What a great example. Luke 10:30. Let's look at that. This is critically important. Luke 10:33. Yeah, I've read this 100 times, but in doing this class, this hit me like a stone. Luke 10:30. Certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho, fell among thieves, which stripped him out of his raiment, wounded him, departed, leaving him half dead. And by chance, there came down a certain priest that way. Interesting. We could talk about the Good Samaritan in the whole class, but who was the priest? Who do you think he represented? Who do you think the Levite represents? Don't you think about it. He passed on the other side. And likewise, a Levite, when he was at the place, came and looked on him. And watch this. He passed on the other side. He didn't even want to get close to this beat up individual. Oh boy, does this hit home? Is this sometimes how we approach people who are going through bad trials? Moral, doctrinal, whatever, depression. Oh, let me, I don't, because I could rub off here. I'm telling you, Jesus was hitting us between the eyes with this story. This is how we react. This is how Mark DeLiberto reacted. I used to come to a Bible school. I never wanted to deal with the people who were in all kinds of issues and problems. I want to deal with the educated and the ones who are teaching and stay with them, because people who are involved in problems, and I don't want to go near them. Oh, Mark D. Hey, somebody told me yesterday about the MD. I really didn't say it like it's the doctor, but somebody pointed that out to me. So, just coincidence. Believe me, I didn't name myself. Okay, but a certain Samaritan, 33, as he journeyed, came from where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion on him. And you know what? I never read that. I always remember the story. You know, he saw the guy, went over there and helped him out, and he really did a good thing, paid for him and all that. But it began with compassion. Could you define compassion for me, simply?
Getting Nancy to move.
Getting Nancy. Oh. Do you want... Are you all right? Okay. But no, good example. If I have compassion, what it in my vernacular, which you may not agree with, who cares? But I'm sensitive to this woman's plight. That's what it means. And when I see her with the thing over her head and she can't see, which is a nice representation of other things, if I see that, I am moved to do something about it. That's what compassion is. See, and we have developed an attitude, brethren, to some degree, that we really don't care. Because it's not my eyes that are getting blinded. I'm pretty comfortable. I'm sitting in my nice, soft seat. I don't have any light flashing on my face. So, Nancy, tough. It's unfortunate. Yeah, right. Compassion, I'm sensitive to that. I have to react to that, and I have to do something about it. So, Nancy, if you want to move. Yeah? Sit over here. Okay. All right, I have too much compassion for her. All right, forget. If you want to, okay. That's what compassion is. It doesn't work all the time, but a lot of the times it does.
Some people don't want to help.
Only a sister could say that. Only a sister could say that. Okay. Step seven. Let's go to step seven. Write this down if you can. It's a quotation from... Are you videotaping this? They'll never believe it. Okay. See, now, watch compassion in action. Look. Paul moved over. What a great example. This is not played. We did not set this up. Okay. Seven, your influence counts, use it, is seven. Your influence counts, use it. Verse Matthew 5:14-16. Don't even look at it. Anybody remember what that says? It's in that Beatitudes right after Christ talks about something. In fact, what we just dealt with. Light. Right. I tell you what, that's important. Let's read it. Matthew 5. Pick out the verse. I just have Matthew 5. Yeah. Matthew 5:14. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill can't be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick. And it giveth light unto all that is in the house. Conclusion, let your light so shine before men that they might see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. Okay. This is going to be tough to accept, but unfortunately, it's the truth. You ever heard that expression? We're a product of our environment. I'm going to narrow that down a little bit more. We are a product of our families. You know, you hung around your parents, and young people, I hope you can identify, right? Maybe you might not accept this right now, but maybe in the future you might. Like it or not, your parents and our parents have affected our lives. You know, some of you have already come up to me and said, you know what, those of you who know my father and mother, man, you remind me of your dad. What a great compliment, too. Someone says that to me. You remind me of your dad. Why? Why? Even the expressions I use, some of the phraseology, the way I talk, comes from my family. Which says what? What's the underlying principle of that? Surroundings affect you and who you are. So that means there's a principle here that every person in this room exudes an influence on someone else. Like it or not. You might want to say, don't look at me. I don't. Everyone, Jim puts out an influence to people, doesn't he? Did you hear his prayer yesterday? This guy, he's got to stop praying because I can't. It's so unbelievable. Here's a guy dealing with what he's dealing with, saying a prayer to Bible school. It breaks me up. But he influences me. In his way, he influences me, as we all do. The way we behave, the way we act, the way we treat each other has an effect. Your influence counts. You have to use it for the good. The way I talk, where do I get this joisy accent? From the people I'm around. The way I dress, my attitudes, my likes. Why do I eat spaghetti every Sunday? Why? I don't. So I'll answer that question because it's the best food for you. Because that's what I grew up with. And you can think of all things in your lives. You know, why does Adrian and Carol talk the way they talk? What, because they talk different in Australia? Yes, they do. And they've been affected by it. We are affected by our surroundings. So the principle is our influence counts. We have to be well aware of that. That's really what affects people to learn the truth. Not so much, although to a degree, obviously, what we say, but what we do. I'm going to give you a phrase I want you to remember. If you could write it down, that would even be even better. Here he goes. Two lines. If you want people to know, if you want to tell people what the truth can do for them, fill it in. Show them what it has done for you. If you want to tell someone what a great thing, what a great hope the gospel is, show them what it's done for you. If we are miserable, discontent, cranky, belly aching people, who do you think we're going to convince? I don't want to be with these people. Look at them. The cranky and fights and thing. So what we demonstrate, if you want to tell people this is how great this truth is, show them what a difference it's made for you. Are you positive? Are we positive? We should be. Listen to hear the talk this morning. I mean, we should be the most positive people on the earth. We've got the solution. We were told how to get there. And we're miserable. We're complaining. We're belly aching. We're fighting. What collateral damage has been done because of that? Think about that. By the way we act, let your light shine before men. Okay. Step eight. I got to do this. Step eight. Confession of our faults. Let's look at James 5:16. James 5:16. Key to healing. James 5:16. Confess your faults one to another. Oh, there's the other element we've already covered. Pray for one another. Pray one for another. That ye may be healed. That ye may be healed. So the question is, how does confessing our faults one to another, which we don't do, we really have a hard time with this. I think. At least Mark D has. And we talked about this yesterday. Why don't we? What's stopping us from confessing our faults to each other? What are some of the problems with that? Confidentiality. Anonymity.
Judgment.
Punishment. Right. I don't want to show Mark D to be a bad person. I don't want to tell Nancy or anyone else here that I've done this or that because I want them to think I'm a pretty good guy. What is that called in the scripture? It's called pride. And we've got enough of it. But yet James clearly tells us this is what brings healing. This is what brings healing. I've got to feel I can confidently come to my brother or sister and confess what I'm doing. Oh, what's another positive to confessing your faults to your brother? What do you else you think it accomplishes? It breaks down, but why does it break? And it does. It breaks down barriers. But why?
It shows you trust them.
Because what?
It shows that you trust them.
You trust them.
All right.
Helps with reconciliation.
Let's back up. Has any of you ever heard of AA?
Yeah.
Okay. One of the things one of the principles they go on is, the first thing you've got to do is say, look, I'm an alcoholic. What does that do when you hear someone else say, so am I? Right. Exactly. In other words, I sit down with my mother-in-law, if she could hear me, and... yeah. She actually does. She actually does hear me. And I confess my faults to her, and she comes back and says, you know, Mark, I've got my own baggage. What does that do automatically between us?
Bonding.
Right. It bonds us, and it puts us at the same level. Some of us, me included, may not feel comfortable with that. We like to feel what? Here, And I don't even want to say this in jest, but I could hardly ever see her doing that to me. But let's say she was rough and tough. Mark, you are a sinner. You're not good. What are you doing wrong with? I know she wouldn't do that. That's not her character. But it is in some of us. And that's where we got to get away from. We've got to get on the level playing field. Once you do that, then the person who you're trying to help, he's amenable to your help. When you put up the pride and, Mark, what's the matter with you? Immediately, Mark D. defends himself. Blocks it out. So the ecclesia, who's dealing with an individual in their ecclesias that are having problems, remember this. Don't expect the weak brother who's going through all these problems to rise up and say, well, you could mock, you could point out all my faults and tell me how terrible I am. He's not going to respond. You know, I can't even tell you that. I can't go there. Let's say hypothetically, those of us who have gone through terrible things in their lives, you know the first thing people will tend to do after you really hit that, what we call rock bottom? I'll tell you the first thing I did. I had to call the people I really wasn't sympathetic towards. I had to give them a call and say, you know what? Maybe I would have said the same thing. Maybe I would have made the same decision. But you know what? I could have been better towards you. I could have been more empathetic toward your situation. I was a terrible healer. Maybe I still am. Hopefully I'm better. But I was terrible then. I know that. I know that now. Because I put up this pretense that MD was up here, you see. And they were down here, all the sick and the wretched and it all. And I didn't put myself down with them. Because that's where I am. Okay. I got to keep going. Okay. Oh, great one. Step nine. We're moving. We're moving now. Here we go. Step nine. Change the focus from me to others. Change your focus from you to others, especially to those in need. And we'll bring out a few verses to prove this. But I'm gonna share with you from psychologists who are dealing with people with depression, people who are truly depressed. By the way, I heard a comment in one of a Christadelphian Bible class that I happen to be attending, and a brother stood up and said, Christadelphians should never be depressed. Okay, very good, very good. They also should never sin, they shouldn't have pride, and they shouldn't have all these things. Unreal, unreal. So, what do psychologists and people who deal with people with depression generally recommend? Stop focusing on yourself. They don't say this to them. Here's what they'll say. You know what? Anybody remember the Peace Corps? Yeah. Or any of these voluntary, humanity efforts to help other people? They tell them, go join these groups. Why? It takes the focus off your own head. You know, half our problem is we're only looking at ourselves. You're sitting, you're thinking about me and my problems and my headaches and my thing and I can't. And this helps people get their focus onto someone else. And boy, it's what's the word? Healing. Not healing. It's therapeutic. It's therapeutic. Get away from ourselves, the focus on ourselves, and get focused on others. Any verse to back that up? Is that scriptural? That it's more important to deal with the ones that are sick than to worry about yourself. Well, that's one. Now I'm thinking of the 90 and 9. The shepherd has the one that goes away. He goes after the one. He puts his focus on that one and not on himself. That's where our focus needs to be. Now, I have Matthew 18, 11 through 14. I don't know what that says. Matthew 18, 11 through 14. Could someone look at that and just tell me what that is? And another, someone else, look at Matthew 25, 33 to 46. I usually have a note on the text. What is Matthew 18, 11? Okay, that is the 99. And 25? Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Then let's look at that. That's the important one. Matthew 25. Where does that start, that text? Ah. 25:34. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, come ye blessed of my father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. This is a bottom line scripture. This is like the bottom line equation. You can put all the peripheral stuff away. This is what it boils down to. Coming into Christ's kingdom. Well, what was important? What was important? For I was a hungered, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick. Oh, there we go. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, you came to me. So the righteous answers him and says, Lord, when did we ever see you a hungry, or feed thee, or thirsty, or gave you drink? When saw we a stranger and took thee in, or naked and clothed you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and I came unto thee? What's the answer? When did we see Christ in all these bad situations? In your brother. In your brother and sister. Because that's what he ultimately says. He says, then the king shall answer and say, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you've done it to the one of the least of these, my brethren, you've done it to me. Wow. Wow. Now, maybe a question to ask here is, the least of these, my brethren. I know I said a couple things on that before. Any thoughts on that? Who's the least of these, my brethren? Maybe the least esteemed. There's no absolute answer on this. I wonder about it myself, to be honest. Who? Anyone else? The least of these, my brethren. Anyone. Right. Right. It's really anyone. And if you see someone sick or in prison in your midst, certainly that's where it begins, then you've done it to Christ. So here's what hit Mark D at a certain point in his life. I thought of all the situations I, being part of the arranging board, had to deal with in our ecclesia. And I don't know if that was my driving force to take care of these people. I saw the problem people as just that. They were, you know, pimples and problems. We got to erase and get rid of, and because our ecclesia is pure, you see. Oh, Mark D. I was so wet behind the ears, you could swim there. That's how bad I was. I never realized that This was Christ. This person who, and you say, well, if they're suffering because of something they messed up on, you don't have to feel bad for them. No good. They're still your brother. They're still your flesh. We're going to get into that a little bit in the next one. But they are your brother. And for you to think that, like our idea is to keep the ecclesia nice and tucked away, and we got all the verses and the doctrines and the thing, we're missing the point. Yeah. I don't want to brag about my parents. I'm going to tell you a story about them because they're not here now. But they taught me a lot of stuff. And I'll tell you, here's one that keeps coming up in my head. There was and I don't know how Mom met her. There was a lady, maybe some of you might remember, Mrs. Infantolino. She wasn't a Christadelphian. She was a woman who lived in Garfield. Somehow my mother met her, maybe in a grocery store. And that was my mother. You know, she'd meet you in a grocery store. She'd give you stamps. She'd give you a thing of eggs. That was just her nature. She was just like that way. I remember as a kid visiting on the way to meeting, because she lived in Garfield. On the way to meeting, we used to go there. My parents used to bring a meal over to her. Now, wasn't even a Christadelphian. Maybe this is maybe another lesson for us. Maybe. Would go there and bring her a meal. Give her, you know, usually spaghetti. I know you don't accept that. Yeah. Here it would be what? Tacos and tortillas and the enchiladas. Someday you'll learn. Yeah. But their behavior, my parents' behavior, my parents' behavior was light, teaching me a lesson, which maybe I didn't get until I was older. But you know what? I'm trying to pull all these principles together. By them doing that, without saying anything, without preaching, although my dad did, believe me, he caught my ear a few times. But he was demonstrating to me, this is what it's about, Mark. And that's how I learned. And hopefully continue to learn. Great example. Okay. Definitely do not want to talk about my parents. Not good. Because I'm a rock. Change the focus from me. Wow. All right, I'm going to go for it. Step 10. Change the focus is 9. Change the focus from me to others. Step 10. This is the hardest one. Develop the faith that God can. Now, I know this is a total overlap from Adrian. I hope he forgives me. He has to, because he's my brother. If he doesn't, I'm going to tell James to see him when he goes back to Australia. But develop the faith that God can. And remember we told a little story about Star Wars? I think it's a pretty insightful thing. Look, I'm not saying Star Wars was the gospel by any stretch. But boy, what a lesson you learned. Remember Luke Skywalker? He's in his... spaceship, but who is he fighting? Who are the people? The Kleons? Who? The Imperial. He's fighting the Imperial. Darth Vader, the guy spoke with that heavy accent. And he's driving that spaceship, and he's getting killed. They're hitting him, and he's sweating, and he can't know what to. And then he hears that voice. Luke, give yourself over to the Force. Whoa. Boomski. And what happened? then he was able to be victorious. What a great, I mean, I don't think the guy was a Christadelphian who wrote that picture. Lucas, John Lucas, whatever his name is. Somehow he got it. He got it. Okay. That God can. Now here we go. Now I'm going to get specific and a little uncomfortable here. For those of you who don't know, who've been around Christadelphians a long time, most of you probably have lived your years in the Christadelphian world. We have a division amongst us. I know that's news for most of you. Everyone of you think we're all one big, happy family. Well, we're not. We're not. And even in my personal life, I have to deal with this every day. I have to deal with it every day. You know, I belong to a meeting in New Jersey. My wife belongs to, don't ask me about how that works, but it does. It does. Love my wife. But I go visit my wife every month, and you know, I sit down with her, and I cannot break bread with her in her meeting. Let me tell you something. Talk about a black eye on our... It's just incredible. Okay, but that being said, I know that's an enlightening thing. I know none of you, most of you probably didn't know about this, but it exists. I heard someone, now I was involved we call everything with these names, and acronyms. NASU, you've heard of NASU? It's this little document, got way too big, but anyway, I was involved with it. And I'll never forget this day when a brother came up to me and said, "Hey, Mark, impossible reunion. Impossible. Impossible. What?" And maybe from look, be honest with you, brethren, if I looked at this from a human standpoint, he's probably right. This mountain is so big, I can't see the top. The problem, though, with that statement is what? That's right. Who's going to go over this mountain? Here, let's look at a verse. Develop the faith that God can. Luke Skywalker. Where can we go to prove that this can't be true? Philippians 2.13. Let's start there. Philippians 2.13. Someone quote it for me. Oh, four. That's right. I'm sorry. 4.13. Close, but it's something about accomplishment. I can do all things. So who is really battling? It's Christ. So when you say we can't do it, what you're contradicting is what Philippians says. Wait a minute, can't that, you know what you're saying when you say we can't do it? Then Christ can do it. And let me tell you something, brethren. His Father built the world, the universe. He made all the gorge over here, the mountains. He made it all. You think he can't overcome this problem? I tell you what, there's no way you could convince me of that. And the scriptures enforces that God can. Okay, let's look at Mark 11:23. Because this is a very, very good point. Mark 11:33. Eleven twenty-three. For verily I say unto you that whosoever shall say to this mountain, say to this mountain, be removed and be thou cast to the sea, and shall not doubt in his heart, and shall believe that those things which he saith shall come to pass, he shall have whatsoever he saith. So when we say we can't, we have a division in our meeting. We have a brother that I cannot approach. We have a division in our body that can't get healed. What do you got to believe? What are these verses saying?
Believe.
I can do it for you, Mark. You see, little Mark, he's out over here and he's seeing this big mountain. But you see, behind me is a much bigger mountain. We have a power source that is indescribable. It goes way beyond anything we can even conceive. Like I say, think about the person or the being who built this world. That's behind us. So this little, give me an example of that in the scriptures where someone had to see through those eyes. Goliath and David. Man, he came up to David. David came up to Goliath. You know how tall he was? Who's the tallest guy here? 6'4", 6'5"? Anybody 6'4" in here? Not even. They're pretty big. If somebody came up to me 6'4", let me tell you, that's big for me. I'm not exactly the most, okay. Don't say nothing. I don't want to hear no cracks from Randy. How tall was Goliath? I think it was like 9 feet. 9 feet. Hold on. That's would be 8 feet. To the top of that floor is probably close to 9 feet. Someone come up to you and said, listen, I want to have a little fight with you at 9 feet. What gave David the confidence? In fact, David was almost like embarrassed to fight the guy. Who are you? Why? What did he say in his response to Goliath? You're not challenging me. If you were, you know, you probably should feel pretty good. Because I'm this little, although David wasn't a slouch, but he was a lot smaller than Goliath. He said, you're challenging the Lord. And you know what? With those eyeglasses, you're in big trouble, Goliath. In fact, he asked, I probably think he felt sorry for him. But that's what happened. He had the faith and the recognition that who was fighting for us was far greater than what we're fighting. So when a brother told me that this reunion can't be achieved, when that division in your meeting can't be conquered, that ailment in your personality or your cranky person, you can't be healed, brethren, we're losing prospect that perspective that God can heal that. My nature 10 years ago, let me tell you, I don't want to paint myself as some no good, but I had to learn so many lessons in life. God is the chiseler. He's the former of the clay. He can do it. So if you're going through a problem, if your ecclesia is going through a problem, if the body's going through a problem, don't sell God short at resolution. Yeah, maybe it's here for a purpose. It's here to try us. I've heard that a lot. And maybe that's true. But never give up that it can't be conquered by the power of God. That's a good place to stop.